36. Caro found Luskin in the small lobby leading to the main gate, his roller bag beside him. She said, "Lyle, a word, please?"
"Mick is driving me home.
He can wait. Did my uncle die during or after his session?"
"You heard Julian?" Luskin said evenly.
He looked exhausted, but more composed than before. A man who had committed to his version of events, or to somebody's version. "I did hear Julian, yes. My uncle was in distress. Julian ended the session, and a few minutes later, Watkins died."
"Yes."
"His vitals."
"Caro," Luskin said, "you're a talented neurosurgeon, and I admire your skill and your caring, but you're not an oncologist. I've seen scores of patients die of cancer, and only a few followed the exact set of steps that you've apparently got stuck in your head. Sam's end was consistent with his disease, and he died of pancreatic cancer, not his multiverse session. Or during it. No." Luskin's gaze did not meet hers. She found out what she wanted to know, and it sickened her.
"I believe you."
"You didn't do it. You didn't even know about it beforehand. But you suspect it now. Julian injected my uncle with something lethal, didn't he? Just as Watkins told him to. So that Watkins could, what, stay in his hallucination after he died? You know that isn't possible, Lyle." He didn't answer her. He thumbed open the gate, walked to the waiting Jeep, and climbed in. It wasn't as if she didn't know that doctors sometimes performed illegal euthanasia. No one talked about it, ever. But it did happen, and from motives of compassion. Caro had seen terminal patients in terrible pain and suffering, and hoped that the end was near for them. Only, Watkins had not been in extraordinary pain. He had even, when she'd checked on him early this morning, rallied a little. First of all, do no harm. Had Luskin done harm? Had Julian? She had no doubt at all that Watkins, who commanded everything in the compound, had ordered the lethal injection, if that was indeed what had happened. Had it? If so, it was something far stranger than mercy killing. Mercy resurrection? Caro wanted to talk to Trevor. Needed to talk to Trevor, a need as palpable as thirst. She found him in his room, working on his laptop, and told him everything that had just happened, including her suspicions. Trevor listened carefully, his gaze never leaving her face.
"I can't say I'm sorry he's gone," Trevor said, "because it sounds like an easy death, as deaths go. But Caro, you can't know what happened to Sam after death. Nobody can know. But love, that's always been true, for all people, at all times."
"I'm not talking about after his death. I'm talking about the cause of his death."
"You can't know that either. And despite our Hippocratic oath, I believe that patients have the right to decide the circumstances of their death. Sam is dead, and he wanted to die. You have to let this go."
Trevor was right. Caro's uncle was dead. He'd wanted to die. She said, "I was sitting with him in the ICU a few nights ago, and he wanted to talk. He said he was going to die. I said, he might yet rally, and he said, no, good for the project. He meant that his death was good for the project."
"I don't know what he meant," Trevor said. "I've read about near-death experiences. Tunnels, lights, the whole show, and probably you have too. Maybe Watkins was experiencing something like that."
"He didn't say death was good for him. He said it was good for the project." "Trevor, how much exactly do you believe of George's theory?"
Trevor reached into a drawer of his desk and took out a bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon and two glasses.
"I believe we should both have some wine if we're going to have this discussion. Also, we can toast Sam. Caro?"
"Yes."
She watched him open the wine, pour it, hand her a glass with his strong, long surgeon's fingers. In the light from his window, filtered by bamboo blinds, the liquid glowed redly. She took a sip, then a longer drink. Almost immediately, warmth spread through her. Trevor said, "I believe all of the hard science underlying George's theory, of course. Quantum effects, entanglement, the way observation changes the behavior of what we call energy and matter, the subjective nature of time. Well, Einstein pretty much nailed that one over 100 years ago. And the subjective nature of space does follow, mathematically, from the rest. Mathematics also establishes at least the possibility of the multiverse. The two key areas, and I think these are the ones you question too, are whether micro-level effects really can apply wholesale to the macro universe, and whether consciousness really does create everything. And, by implication, can alter everything in a branch of the multiverse. That's why I want to experience a session for myself, to see if they feel like reality, or like an elaborate hallucination created by Julian's software." You're saying that subjective experience should have as much weight as scientific evidence.
I'm saying that subjective experience has some weight, and I don't yet know how much.
And I don't think you do either. You told me, remember, about your experience in the garden when you were a child?
The feeling of being woven into everything.
Can you say that wasn't real? Was just a hallucination? You told me you were never a fanciful child.
She said slowly, "I don't know." The clouds were no longer there, and neither was Caro. She was the clouds, the grass, the breeze, the ant crawling across her arm. Everything was her, and she was everything. Trevor said,
"I don't know yet either. That's why you're going to implant me as soon as a backup surgeon arrives, which will be in 2 more weeks. Not a new surgeon, although Julian is working on that. Your backup for my implant is Ralph Egan. He's only flying in for 1 day for my surgery. A favor to Julian. Caro, your turn. How much of George's theory do you believe?"
She studied his face, unusually tense. Both of them knew how important this could be to any future they might have together. Weigert's primacy of the observer was the elephant in the room, and, in the first flush of love, they'd been stepping around it. She said slowly, "Like you, I believe the underlying science, to the extent that I can follow it without the math. And I can see how George's conclusions follow from both the science and from his premises. But I can't shake the idea that there are other possible explanations, the chief of which is that Julian's software, both on the chips and in the computers, cause unusually consistent, detailed, directable hallucinations. And I can't see any way of proving otherwise."
"Not even that when implantees go back for a second session in the branch of the universe each created, things have evolved there on their own? George told me that during his third session with Rose, he discovered that their house smelled of smoke, and workmen were swarming over the kitchen. Evidently, there'd been a small fire. Nothing on Julian's programming had included a kitchen fire, and George had certainly not thought about hallucinating one. It happened because that branch of the universe had independently evolved. Did he tell you about the kitchen fire?"
"Yes, but of course, no one plans or even thinks about what a hallucination will contain. The content of a hallucination is unpredictable."
"In that case, everything else about George's 3 visits to Rose should have been equally unpredictable. Her, the house, all of it. And it didn't partake at all of the chaotic randomness of hallucinations. You can't have it both ways, Caro."
He was right, and yet, "I'm not convinced."
"But you're not unconvinced either."
"No," she said reluctantly.
just confused. George is a great mind. But great minds have been wrong before. The history of science is full of wrong turns.
Yes. But now let me go from the macro to the micro, from the universe to you and me, and ask the big question. How much does your confusion, no, that's not the right wording, how much does it matter if I end up believing totally in the primacy of the observer and you don't? How will it affect our life together?
Will we have a life together?
I hope so. I want a real future with you. She felt her heartbeat go irregular, her throat tighten.
If you believe George totally, and stay with the project after it goes public. I wasn't planning on staying here indefinitely, Trevor. This isn't the only kind of neurosurgery I want to practice. And I have to. There's Ellen and Kayla, but I couldn't bear to lose you either. He nodded. They didn't touch. The moment felt too solemn and too fraught to add any other element to it.
Trevor said, "Do you think you will ever choose to be implanted yourself?"
"No."
"Is that a condition of us?"
"No. Neither is your continuing on with the project indefinitely. People do manage long-distance relationships, Carol. If necessary, we can do that. Or I may become disillusioned about the project after I'm implanted. Or you may become convinced.
We have to wait and see.
Not completely satisfactory, but there it is."
"Yes," Caro said. "There it is. A life together." He wanted her, even if she disagreed with him on the fundamentals of the universe. She wanted him. So much happiness flooded her that she was ashamed. All over the compound, little knots of people were grieving. Watkins had just died. This was a time for grief, not for this warm, all-encompassing happiness. Unless Samuel Lewis Watkins was also happy. Somewhere.